Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love
Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But
right.
I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark of the Q. I am your host. I am very excited, first of all, to be back doing regular shows. We had a show last week in Los Angeles, and we are doing the live Periscope thing again this week. I'm hoping to do this regularly, as well as the podcast as well. You guys can listen in. If you are on Periscope and want to listen to the live audio as well, or want to download the audio after we are done, please go to blogtalkradio.com/somewhereinvegas. That's blog, blogtalkradio.com/somewhereinvegas. So with that in mind, I'm very excited to have my first guest coming up. She's a really talented actress. She's getting her first big major movie role coming up on the biopic All Eyes on Me. It'll happen on June the 16th. I am very excited to have Raven Farrell on with us right now. Are you there, Raven?
Hey, how are you? Yes, I'm here.
I'm only okay. You hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you good.
Okay, cool. You know, first of all, how's everything going with you?
Everything's going good. You know, I'm just out here promoting this film and, you know, trying to get ready and to share this moment with everybody. How about you?
I'm doing good. You're coming in a little bit low, so just let you know.
Am I low now?
Oh, no, you're fine now.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. Just let me know if you can't hear me.
Yeah, anyway, it's exciting for you to be able to get such a big important role into a biopic like this. You know, tell me a little bit about how you got the role and a little bit about, you know, really kind of researching the role and getting to know the character.
Well, I got the role by auditioning like I would with any other project. It was a little bit different, though, because their process of casting was a little longer than anyone else's. I originally auditioned, and like a few weeks I went by, and I had got called in. But what was crazy was before I had got my call back, I kind of had a dream about I had a dream about me actually booking the role. So, like, once I had my callback, I kind of felt like that I already had it. So I went in my callback feeling super, super confident. And I really feel like that played a huge part of me actually booking the role. Cetra Shakur is Tupac's sister, for anybody who doesn't know. And she's pretty low-key as a person. So there wasn't a lot to research about her online, but what I did do online was, like, some of her videos and everything, so I researched with that. I talked with producers on set. I also read, you know, a few of Tupac's books and watched his interviews about her and everything. So kind of from every small aspect, I kind of, like, you know, gained a idea of who she was in a way.
Now, were you familiar with Tupac before the movie? Have you listened to any of his music?
Oh yeah, I am a huge fan of Tupac. I've been a huge fan of Tupac. Actually, his film Poetic Justice was my very first film that I probably knew like the back of my hand. I'm talking about word verbatim. So that's how I got introduced with him, which was Poetic Justice. And then after that, as I got older, I started listening to his music and everything. You know, because his music actually has a message to it. So, and that's the kind of music I like. So that's how I fell in love with him as a rapper.
And any certain song that you personally like?
I'm sorry?
Any song that you personally like?
I have a few favorites, but I'd say my top one is probably I Ain't Mad At You.
Yeah, that was a little off the cuff there.
Yeah. It has, I like the message it gives, you know, because everybody changes. As we get older and as we experience different things, we all change. But, you know, sometimes people take it a different way. And I feel like the message that he was giving in that song is just, you know, it changes for the better majority of the time. So, you know, if that's what you got to do in order to grow as a person, I ain't mad at you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you started acting. You know, you've acted with some you know, and some of the greater shows out there right now. I mean, tell us a little bit about how you got into acting and a little bit about, you know, how you really kind of got started doing some of these shows. I know Atlanta's starting to be a very huge hotbed in terms of the movie world and the television world. But tell me a little bit about how you got started down in Atlanta.
So I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, originally. And I went to a performing arts school, the School for Creative and Performing Arts, like, my entire life. So I kind of grew up with entertainment. I did, you know, a little theater in my middle school ages and everything. But once I actually got to Atlanta is when I realized that acting is what I wanted to do, like, full-fledged. See, what happened was I actually went to a workshop that involved, like, some actors. And from what they were telling me and everything, I just kind of just wanted to experience a class because, you know, I also feel like all actors should, I mean, anyone who's not an actor should still take an acting class because it becomes very therapeutic because, in a way, everything that you do as an actor, all your feelings are exaggerated. So I feel like all the feelings that you don't get to feel, like, in your everyday life, when you're sad or when you're happy or when you're mad, everything becomes, like, times 10, you know? When you're sad, you're devastated. When you're happy, you're triumphantly joyful. When you're mad, you're mercilessly enraged. And I feel like if you do these acting classes, it becomes really, really therapeutic because you get to live out a lot of things that you are forced not to live out, you know? And that's how it all started. And at the time, I was going through a lot with, you know, just school, relationships, my family and everything. And I started doing it more consistently. And then one day, like, I just, you know, I started to think about, like, what I wanted to do overall in life. I'm just like, this is the only thing that makes me 100% happy, to where I feel like if I didn't get paid, if I didn't get fame, if I didn't get anything, I would still want to do this, you know? And after that, I just took it on full-fledged.
Yeah, I mean, by the sounds of it, you know, you kind of dig into the method a little bit, too. I mean, the thing is that, you know, maybe what a lot of people that aren't in acting realize is the fact that there's a lot of emotion that goes through that in terms of personal experiences as well. And that can be kind of therapeutic to be able to act through those things through a different situation or have the same feelings through it, during a different situation as well. So it's a very, you know, I think sometimes that's very therapeutic in terms of it.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely helped me through a lot.
Yeah, now you've been doing a lot of serious roles as of late. I mean, do you ever want to dip into comedy eventually?
In everyday life, I'm kind of the light of the party. I like to be, you know, that class clown kind of thing. But, you know, with acting, if I had a choice, I would say drama. I would prefer drama because I feel like I connect to that more, as far as like experiences in life and everything. But, you know, comedy come along, I have no problem doing that at all because, you know, I like to make people laugh. I like to make people laugh all the time.
Now, we've talked a little bit about your acting. Do any singing at all?
I do not. Well, I do, but I don't do it well. You know, I sing in the shower. I have my own sold-out shows at my house, but probably don't sound as good as, you know, to other people as it does in my head.
sometimes you just don't have that talent in you or whatever, or you know, I think, I've always think that, you know, people can sing, it's just a question of how they sing and where they sing as well, so, but we'll see what goes on there. You know, like I said, Atlanta's such a hotbed, you've worked with so many series out there as well. How's it been working with some of the directors out there on some of the stuff that you've been doing, like, what was it, Green, I'm sorry, and Greenleaf. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, some of these and complications and all that as well. How's it been for you to work with some of these actors and kind of learn on set?
It's been super, like, I have to remember, you know, at times that I am at work. Sometimes it's super, super surreal, like, because these are the people who I literally grew up watching myself. And I would never, like, and I tell myself that all the time, like, if I could tell myself my 10-year-old self, you know, where I'd be now and who I'd be working with now, I'd be like, no way, you know? It seems like it's impossible and it's, like, unreal. But, you know, I always try to keep it professional, but I am always grateful and appreciative of it. Lee Daniels, like, I love him to death. So, like, to be able to meet him was crazy. That was, like, probably one of, like, the top highlights in my life, you know, for Star. And working with one of the top actors that I enjoyed working with was Danai Gurira. She plays Michonne in The Walking Dead, but she also plays our mom, Miss Athena Shakur, in All Eyes on Me. And one thing about her is, like, just the way that she prepares for a scene is literally just a learning experience. Like, not even seeing her perform, just to watch the way she prepares for it, you know? Like, the way that she transforms and she stays in her own zone. And, like, any time that I wasn't filming a scene and she was filming a scene, I would go and watch her film her scene because I would learn so much from just watching her. Like, I don't even have to say anything to her, you know? Just watching her. And I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful to have been able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Now, you said mentioned that you're usually from Ohio. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff going on in Atlanta as well, and you know, I believe you kind of split your time sometimes up to Los Angeles as well. I mean, how's it been? I mean, obviously, not even with the movie out, I'm pretty sure you've been you've come to a little bit of the limelight in terms of wanting to get some more roles and all that as well. How's it been for you ever since you've done the film and you know, how's it been, you know, in terms of finding work and being able to shine a little bit more brighter in terms of your acting career?
Yeah, I definitely do feel like I am starting to get noticed more with the credit of All Eyes on Me. I think about where I was last year at this time and the opportunities that I was given last year at this time versus this year this time, it definitely has expanded. And I just plan, like, I'm thankful for the opportunities, and you know, I took a lot of years praying for these opportunities, but my goal is to be ready for them. So I'm just at the moment right now, I'm really just just trying to train hard and be ready for, you know, what's to come my way so that I am able to take full advantage of whatever opportunity is next.
Yeah, you know, I really look forward to that. I mean, I really look forward to watching this movie. I mean, obviously the red carpets haven't started for this yet. I think obviously the debut is going to be June 16th. I'm assuming that the red carpets are going to be a little bit earlier than that as well. I mean, how are you thinking of that, Ross, about that right now? Or is there any outfits that you're thinking about wearing to the thing yet? Or are you going to kind of wait until that kind of happens?
No. I've actually been looking at some stuff. Me and my mom, we from day, every once in a while, you know, every like other day, we probably screenshot each other's dresses and send them to each other. Like, what you think about this? What you think about this? I have a few different styles in mind, but I don't have like a definite idea yet. But I do have a few choices.
Now, I mean, how much of a fashionista are you? Do you like to shop and dress for clothes, or is that something that's kind of something that you have to kind of do once in a while when like a need happens like this?
Well, actually, I do like to dress, but I have different styles on different days. You know, sometimes like I'm more of a chill person. I'm not exactly the girliest girl unless I have to be. Like whenever I go out to events and it's like, okay, you know, throw on a dress and some heels, and I feel good. You know, I feel good when I do that. But on an everyday type of thing, I say like I kind of dress more so tomboyish with a girlier kick to it, you know, and you know I do a lot of online shopping, so that's where that lies.
Yeah, I mean it's great to be able to go out and see that as well. I mean, I want to talk to you a little bit about your name. I mean, obviously, you know, you're named after the great Raymond Simone, who's was a really great actress, still is a really great actress as well. Had several different series, are you aware of her work? Have you met her before? And was that, or is that somebody I'm pretty sure you'd like to meet at one point?
Oh yeah, I'd love to meet her. I have not met her yet, but if the Lord loves me, then one day I will meet her. I actually got her name from when she was in the Cosby Show when she was younger. My mom actually admired her as a little girl, and she reminded her of my oldest sister, actually, my oldest sister, Ronisha. And by the time that I was born, I guess my mom just hoped and prayed that I would turn out like her, as far as just like her, just as far as just being like super adorable and everything. And she ended up giving me her name, and then I ended up trying to follow her footsteps at least, and hopefully I will one day. She's very talented, and I feel like she's like Disney's legend. I feel like That's So Raven was one of the best shows in my childhood, definitely, 100%.
Now, you know, I mean, it's great to be able to see that as well. I mean, have you been going to school at all, or is acting been your full-time gig right now?
I am actually a senior at Kennesaw State University in Kennesaw, Georgia. So one more year. We're actually going through finals week right now. So that's what my head has been for the past 2 weeks. I'm just studying and just trying to leave out the semester with a good kick. And, you know, two more semesters to go, and I'll be up out of here.
Well, I would almost say that you're studying acting. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, in college, I'm actually studying communications, mass media studies, and then I take acting class at Drama Inc. Outside of Kennesaw State, which is in Atlanta, Georgia. So I guess you can say I'm kind of in different schools.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, even with communications, mass media, it's great for crossover into television, more of the hosting roles, more of the reporting roles as well. I mean, how has that been helping you in terms of understanding the business in terms of being an actor and also kind of the business overall in terms of television and film?
You said how is acting helping me?
I mean, how's studying communications and mass media helped you in terms of understanding show business a little bit better?
Oh, wow. Well, this semester especially, it has helped me see, like, more so the PR side, the public relations. I definitely understand both sides in a way of just, like, what the job is of, like, you know, public relations, and what exactly are you to expect out of them, and just how the way things work business wise, because a lot of times, like, we just look at it's kind of like how when you get cast for a role, you know, you audition for it, and when you don't get it, you automatically assume, like, oh wow, like I could probably suck at that audition, you know. But a lot of times, 9 times out of 10, it's things that's out of your control. I mean, don't get me wrong, you can do a bad audition, but if you felt good about your audition, 9 times out of 10, you did good on an audition. It's just that there's things out of your control. There's your hair color, there's your height, there's your ethnicity, there's a lot of things that come into play, and that's the same way it is in the public relations world. You know, there's a lot of things that's out of your control as far as, like, you know, as how known you are and how, and you know, what credits you have. And it's just you know, seeing their side and becoming more understanding of why things happen the way they do in this business.
Yeah, now, outside of acting, I mean, are you looking to do other roles in showbiz, maybe direct, maybe act, maybe host a couple things? I mean, is that something that you may be looking forward to in the future?
Yeah, in the future I plan on getting more into producing, as well as more of a host for, like, just talk shows that's, like, you know, like E! News and Wendy Williams and The Real and Good Morning, you know, Good Morning America. Just, I guess, a TV personality.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, like I said, you're going to get a lot of attention coming out with this movie as well. I mean, is there any certain things that you're kind of excited about once this movie comes out? I mean, you know, I think the red carpet's going to be obviously slammed with a lot of people, a lot of celebrities that probably have known Tupac or have, you know, really just want to go see this movie. I mean, are you really excited about this? And is there anybody you're hoping to meet on the red carpet?
Yes. If anyone, the person that I really, really hope to meet is his sister. I haven't gotten a chance to meet her yet. Saturation Shakur. So hopefully, you know, when this premiere wraps around, I'm able to finally have that meeting with her and just, you know, I hope I did her justice. I hope I hope she's satisfied with what I did. And I just want to see if, like, everything that I came across and everything that I put together, I just want to see if, you know, how accurate I am, I guess. Yeah, so hopefully one day, well, around the premiere or around when the movie actually drops, I'm able to do that. But I also can't wait to meet, like, just everyone who you know, who, like you said, who knew Tupac and who got to catch his vibe, you know, when he was around, and just to hear stories and get their input on everything, and just, you know, how we did, just their opinion of, you know, the film and everything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting because I'm pretty sure, you know, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg will be there for the premiere in Los Angeles, so it'll be interesting to be able to see that as well. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great. It's great. I kind of wish she would have went up to accept Tupac's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. Snoop ended up doing it. I was watching this past weekend, but yeah, it would be interesting to be able to see what she has to say to you. And hopefully, I think that you probably did her justice. You know, just by appearing in this movie. So it's great to be able to see that as well.
Thank you.
Anything else coming up for you?
Right now I am just, like I said, getting ready for the next opportunity that comes my way.
Now that's at Raven, that's R-A-Y-V-E-N Farrell, on Instagram and Twitter. You guys can check her out there as well. All Eyes on Me comes out June 16th, in theaters.
June 16th.
So, yeah. Which is I think Pac's 45th anniversary, 45th birthday, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So definitely check that out in theaters as well. You know, Raven, absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Look forward to seeing what goes on after this. Obviously, like I said, this will put you in the spotlight. We're going to see you a lot more often in terms of some of these roles that you might be getting in terms of it. So this is a good launching pad for you. Congratulations on getting the role, and I really look forward to seeing you on the big screen.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Raven, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
That was Raven, everybody. Raven Terrell, like I said, you can follow her on Twitter, and I'll show you these on there. Raven Farrell on Twitter and Instagram. All Eyes on Me on June the 6th. Let's see here. Give me 1 second here. I think our next guest is up. I just want to make sure. We'll take a look and see if this is our next guest. I'm hoping it's our next guest, and I'll give him a proper send-up if it is. So Mitchell Levy is an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, and motivational speaker and author. He's written many, many books, launched many, many companies, and he's was advised to many of the CEOs in the top 100, Fortune 100 companies as well. So let me get him on, see if we can get this on here real quick. Give me 1 second. Mitch Levy, is that you?
Yes, it is. Good to be here.
Good to be here. How's everything going on your end?
It's going great. It's it's a gorgeous Monday. Had a phenomenal 3-day retreat this weekend, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting to kind of read a little bit about your biography and how you've developed so many businesses and, you know, written so many books as well. Tell me a little bit about your background, how you got started in business, and a little bit about your education.
So, let's see, born on the East Coast, so normally an East Coast guy, born in New York, raised in New Jersey. We were not we were below the poverty line, I would believe, when we were born. And mom was good enough to actually instill the thought in her three kids. So single mom and the thoughts in her kids were, hey, you could do whatever you want. I ended up going to college at the University of Miami, then got my MBA at the College of William & Mary. And everything that I've done, all sort of paths I've taken have been an opportunity has sort of presented itself, and I actually saw the gift at the time and I took it. And so getting into business, I was working in the corporate world. So at the time I was working for Sun Microsystems, and I was running the e-commerce component of Sun Supply Chain. And I ended up getting my first mentor, not until my 30s, which, by the way, if you're listening and you have an opportunity to ask somebody to mentor you, or somebody wants to mentor you and they ask you, oh, please say yes. Because it's always good to have an outside person take a look at who you are and what you're doing. So I had a mentor. Basically, this is my boss's boss. And I said, you know, I don't think I want to work at this company the rest of my life, but I can't quite figure out where to go next. And what he did is he gave me a framework. And what I recognized from what he did there, so I spent a couple more years at Sun, and then since 1997, I've been working for myself, and I just let opportunities sort of come my way, and I build businesses around it, it's been a blast. And what happens is I recognize that if you can give somebody a framework, give them an understanding of how the world could fit in place for them, it allows people to truly nourish their souls, nourish their hearts, and be able to do the types of things they want to do. And so that's what my mentor way back when gave me, and that's kind of what I do now for many other people, and love doing it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about businesses and how they, you know, and how, yeah, you have to adapt in the ever-changing world, especially now. Things kind of change up. You're probably right during when really the Silicon Valley was really starting to pump forward with Sun and a bunch of these other companies as well. I mean, tell me a little bit about the changing way of business and the ability for people to adapt and have to learn how to adapt to the changing times, as it were.
Oh, it's really simple. We're in the middle of a transformation from the industrial age to the internet age. And if you think we're in the internet age, no, we're not. You've not seen nothing yet. But we're getting there. I would say if you think about it in cycles, we're probably on our third cycle of a transformation from industrial to internet. Things that will change. I'll just give you an example, and then we'll go back directly to your question of how things are changing and what we should do. But what you got to think about is whether it's 10 years from now, or my number I'm thinking is 20 years from now or 30 years from now, we're going to look back at society and we're going to think it's archaic that we let human beings behind the wheel of an automobile. Right? So all of a sudden, if you think about that statement, what does that mean for the 3.4 million people who drive a truck for the living, or taxi cab drivers? We've seen what happened to them with Uber, but now what happens when Uber's cars become driverless? What about buses? What about anyone who gets behind the wheel to make money? What are they going to do? Well, life changes. Same thing with business. In Silicon Valley, I can't tell you the number of people who may have grown up as an engineer working on a particular Intel chip, and then Intel and the industry makes a decision and they go in another direction. And there are many engineers that are left by the wayside because they haven't grown and learned and continue to educate themselves. So the old days of going to school for a particular vocation, being educated, starting your business or entering into the corporate world and hoping that you get to keep the same job forever and it gives you your retirement fund and all that stuff, that is gone. It just doesn't exist. So what you need to continually be doing is talking to other people, reading lots of stuff, seeing what's going on in the world, and continually changing who you are as an entrepreneur. The person you need to listen to, or the set of people you need to listen to, are your customers. And it's not just your customers of today, but your customers of tomorrow. And the best piece of advice I could possibly give you is think about things that you love doing today that just give you absolute brilliance and satisfaction. And then go to people who just don't do that well, but they need it. And just go to them and ask them, What sort of pain do you have? What sort of problem do you have? What are some things that would make life better? And it turns out if you could sort of figure out what the pain points are the people who don't do what you can do really well are, well, you've got a business, whether it's a service business or you build a product around it or you collect a whole bunch of people together to make it bigger and do other things. And largely, when I start a company, that's what I do. I typically find somebody who I like, who I think will work together well. And the entity, and I'm not going to say company yet, the entity officially starts when we find our first customer. So if you never find a customer, then it's just talking. But I don't talk very long. We don't have to talk about how we're going to negotiate and split all these profits that don't come and blah, blah, blah. You know, we say, hey, it'd be fun to work together. Great, let's grab our first client. The reason you work together with a partner on your first client is because at some point in time, shit's going to hit the fan. And when the proverbial it happens, the thing that you have to think to yourself is, if I'm not in the room, is the partner I'm working with delivering the value to the customer that I would do myself? And in many cases, you get it right. I can't tell you, there are a couple cases where I just missed the boat in terms of my understanding of who the person that I was partnering with is. So if you decide you don't like that person, well, then you don't create another project together. If you decide you like that person and you don't get another client, well, you've had a fun, profitable experiment. And if you like that person and you get more clients, guess what? You got a new business. And that's kind of how I've started a lot of my companies.
Now, I mean, how important is it for you to have a team and to be able to have that team adapt and change a little bit, or, you know, work for their strengths and know who you want to hire in terms of where your weaknesses are? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's really important today to recognize that we don't live in a world that is just there's one way and only one way to do things. We live in a world that's continually transforming and changing. Whether it based on your previous guest, whether it's the way we both consume and create entertainment, that's continually transforming. You know, and you can look at all the types of things that happened there. It's whether or not – here's what used to bother me when I was going to school and my first set of jobs. I was told in school, the books told me that customers really mattered. And you got to do great customer service and you've got to really deliver value. And then I entered the workforce and, you know, the companies didn't seem to care about their customers. All they cared about was whether or not the customers were paying money, not really that they were happy or not that they were delighted. They just wanted them to be happy enough so that they'll pay tomorrow. Well, that's changed, not 100% everywhere. There are still companies that just don't know how to and don't deliver valuable customer service. A number of them are gone. But there are still companies around there that do that. But we now have concepts like Yelp. Right. And if you let me use Yelp as a verb, we now, before typically as a consumer, before we buy any product or service, don't we actually Google it and look for the Yelp score or look for customer reviews or get a feeling for how that company has delivered value? And if we see a lot of negative reviews, we may turn off and not be interested. And so if you hire somebody today to solve a problem, and they're listening to their customers, and the customers are telling them they have a different problem, person can't be smart enough to adopt, that's a problem for you personally, right? Because if you're not solving the ever-changing needs of your customer base, you will disappear. And you can look at companies like Blockbuster, who have disappeared. Look at almost every publisher, right? What has happened to the business model there. Look at taxi cabs and that whole industry and profession. Look at Yellow Pages and what happens there. I mean, they're not gone, but they're trying their best to transform. They've got a cash cow, but they're trying to transform. So what's important is really the opportunity. I think what's changing for us as consumers, whether that's B2B consumers or B2C consumers, is our ability to actually see how the company we want to do business with has served customers just like us in the past. And so customer service is becoming more and more vital, and the ability to make your customers happy is absolutely paramount in terms of what we do. One of the things that what I have, which I love, I have this platform called Aha That, and we've had many companies who have created books by doing nothing more than listening to their customers and hearing feedback and hearing desires of what their customers want, or who have written books based on pain points that their customers have and then deliver them to the customers so they're in recognition that the company they're working with is the expert in the space. And more importantly, it's helped them pick up many new clients. And I think what we need today is continually using tools, whether they're social media or other vehicles, to be able to continually change, deliver value, change what we do, and morph to where we need to be to make sure that we continue to have compelling customers that are coming to us to solve their problems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now I could say a big thing too is choice. The idea that maybe in the past we didn't have as much choice as we do now, especially with the internet culture. You know, the global business community is now a lot smaller and a lot bigger in terms of access. We're seeing some businesses go by the way of dinosaurs because they don't give proper customer service. There's other things as well. I mean, you know, again, it's kind of an adapting world right now in terms of what customer service is and what that means in this space right now. You know, how much do you think that, do empathy and the ability to understand what the customer wants or needs or what their concerns about is important? I mean, it seems like we were talking a little bit about that when you're talking about, you know, how customer service needs to be, you know, needs to be a kind of a little bit more of a hands-on approach nowadays and something that everybody should be concerned about more often than maybe back in the day.
Well, it's really, you hit the nail on probably one of the biggest questions that exist in corporate America today, right? And that is, you look at companies that have just had phenomenal customer success stories, and some do better than others. I mean, where, you know, you've read about Zappos, you know, a shoe store, online shoe store, but they're the quintessential customer service piece. Amazon, who purchased them, quintessential customer service. You heard about Hilton Hotels and things they've done there. And sometimes you've heard some bad stories. We've all seen a video of United Airlines and what they did and what happened as a result of that. And, you know, what's interesting is what companies absolutely need is what you asked about. They need employees who have empathy, who listen to their clients, who change the product offering based on that, who really help build a bond between the client and the company. Now, it really is the client and the individuals, but the client and the company, so that you get a long-term desire to work with that company. Now, there's a difference between the need, which that is absolutely needed in today's world, and what the boardroom says they want. And so that's the dichotomy today, is how much are we willing to pay for good customer service? And because, you know, when budgets are cut, one of the first places it goes is there. And what's the experience we're delivering? And how are we going to do it in such a way that our clients come back? And how do we live in you're seeing a tremendous number of transformations from, and particularly in the software industry, from paying for things once a year or paying for something, you buy it outright for life and then you pay a maintenance fee, to things where you pay monthly. Well, what happens when you're paying monthly is, good news, your client can go right away. It's still as painful to go and leave, but what that requires you to think about is not just a different sales model, because the sales acquisition is a whole lot easier when you could buy and leave immediately, but it requires you to deliver a different level of service to not just ensure that they're a customer paying the bill, but that they're a customer using your product effectively to be able to do whatever it is that you promised they would do. And that's new. That's different. Companies need to think about new ways. There's a whole new industry talking about how to make that happen. And that's unique. So to answer your question, the type of personality traits that I see in today's up and coming generation, where they're brighter, they're multitasking, they understand the world, they don't think about opening up an Encyclopedia Britannica or a dictionary to learn the word, but they're gonna sitting around the dinner table, they're gonna Google the question and get the answer immediately. That world is more appropriate to the world we're living in today. And there are, for good or for bad, many people who have been doing things a certain way that are still in power today. And they're only in power for as long as their shareholders let them, because because the company hasn't deteriorated beyond that. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think there is a little bit more of a mellow culture with this generation in terms of that. I think hopefully we're going to shift that a little bit more. I mean, it used to be that the situation with customer service was the fact that, you know, it was a, you know, it was a minimum wage job. It's a slug job until, you know, you get up and you race up to a different level and on there as well. But I think there's starting to become a little bit more of an appreciation in terms of that job. I mean, it's a company service job. It used to be that, you know, maybe a janitor or whatever was like the lowest end of the totem pole, but we're seeing a lot more people start up their jobs in a customer service role, and them wanting, you know, having to slug it out through that as well. And that ends up being like one of the lower totem in terms of, you know, finding a job or whatever, and customer service is very important on that as well. But I think there are some people that are starting to get that appreciation that this is important in order to learn something that'll help you out later on, because you're going to have to deal with people eventually, and this is probably the best way about going about it.
Well, a successful company exists because you have clients that are going to pay you money to buy your products or services, and you just can't. There isn't a lifetime value. You don't just acquire a customer and they stay forever. They stay for as long as they're happy with your service, and I think there absolutely is more choice today, because the vehicles in which the potential customer has significantly increased, and so our ability to provide a service to a remote part of the world, or for those people in a remote part of the world to be able to provide a service, is significantly higher. Good example: if you're a graphics person, 10, 15 years ago, you know, you could basically put up your graphics sign then and before. And, you know, if you're in Silicon Valley, it's $110 an hour or so. And then at some point in time, it went down to 50 and then went down to 25. And now if I want a graphics person, typically I'm going to go to a site called Upwork, UPWORK.com. And I'm going to put in the job request I need. And I might say, and depending on the request, I can find a graphics person for less than $5 an hour. And, you know, maybe they require a little bit more handholding in terms of what we're doing. But for publishing, I can't afford now to pay the $50 or $100 an hour for a graphic person when I got somebody who's doing it for $5 who does, in some cases, a better job. And that's just, life has changed in terms of where we get our services and what we do. Matter of fact, one of the things I may recommend for anyone in business today, particularly if you're running a company or running a division or a department, you should potentially. And by the way, I have no stock in Upwork or, you know, not involved at all. So this is a assessment or a recommendation that has nothing to do with them. But you may have your people either use Upwork or Fiverr, which is Fiverr. You may have your people or encourage them to hire people to do some of the tasks they don't want to do on Upwork or Fiverr, and to be able to get more done because they have other people doing some of the stuff that doesn't need to be done at that high price points. And interesting way to think about how you do things differently.
Yeah, I know, and this goes back. It's kind of weird that we're going forward. We're actually going back to what we did earlier on in terms of business back in the 19th century, in the fact that a lot of people are bidding for work, and, you know, the lowest bidder, you know, will be able to have a strategic advantage in terms of that as well, and that just from a personal standpoint, you know. Uber is a good
but
example.
Do you mind if I butt in there? It's not just the lowest bidder. It's the lowest bidder, or it's the reasonably priced bidder with great customer feedback. Because what I forgot to mention was on Upwork or Fiverr, there are stars. You know, there's the five-star system has turned out to be the one of the most universal ones. I think Amazon pushed that initially. So I look for people potentially at a certain price point, but also they have to be above a certain customer service point. So same thing, you're driving for Uber, you get below a certain level, and Uber takes your ability to drive away, right? We live in a different world today than we used to live in. So I agree with you conceptually. We keep coming back. The models that live in life continue to recycle. So we're back to those models. We just happen to have an enhanced version of that because we now no longer need to listen to word of mouth advice on whether or not this person was good or bad at what they do. We have to look online and see, you know, a couple or tens or hundreds or thousands of recommendations that point to either positive or negative.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's great. I mean, that's great as well. I mean, you know, and, you know, getting that instant feedback and you know, getting the best of both worlds. You know, you're getting a, you know, a low enough bid that you're happy with, saving money, but you're also getting a good quality and a good enough or even better quality of service that way as well. So, you know, that's kind of an amazing thing about what business has been doing right now. Speaking of which, I wanted to talk a little bit about social media because tell you a little bit of a story. I also work with fighters once in a while, and I always tell them that they should be on social media. They have to sell their own brands, basically, these MMA fighters, because that means sponsors. That means, you know, being able to get in front of the media as well. And a lot of them are worried that they have to tweet every day or post something every day. I'm like, going, you don't really have to. You can do, you know, a little thing every couple of days to be able to interact with your fans. That's the most important part, is to be able to interact with fans, answer their questions as well as that. And I think that transfers really well over to the business end of things about that as well. Tell me a little bit about this, using social media in a business sense.
You know, it's now you're getting on an area that I also get particularly passionate about, because what I want to do is I'll put a small seed in the ground. I have solved the business author's dilemma, which deals with both social media and the ability to write a book quickly. So let's come back to that. And that's with a platform that I love to talk about called Aha That. What it comes down to is it's very difficult to think. In the old days, you know, the really old days, before there were fax machines and fax machines came out in the world, there were many businesses who said, you know, I don't need a fax machine to do business, and some of them have disappeared. Same thing with websites. I don't need a website to do business, and guess what? Some of them have disappeared. You take a look at anything that's happening, the same is true today with social media. You don't need, I mean, technically, you could still have a business that doesn't have social media. And how do you get clients? Well, you're typically getting clients on a word-of-mouth basis. And many people live that way. There's a problem, though. One, you are not doing what we talked about in the first half of the show, and that is you are not interacting with your audience. They do not know who you are. They do not have a feel for you. They do not have empathy for you. They may not be interested in you, because you haven't shown any iota that you have interest in them. Two, word of mouth doesn't work forever. And there are many businesses that have been very successful at generating significant revenue from Facebook or Twitter or Google or LinkedIn or Instagram. I mean, there are just tons of sites where it is just a great way to communicate and interact with your audience. And so the ability to be active in social, active doesn't mean you have to spend hours a day. The problem is it's a jungle, and there just aren't, there are many people who sort of raise their hand and say they're the prophet of do this, and you'll be the instantly recognized on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn. And there are many of those who teach you. But let's just step back for a second. We'll make this a quick learning moment. You don't need to be active every single day to be able to say you're active on social. And I think you put it perfectly. First, make sure you've got a reasonable profile on the sites that your clients are on. right? So if you do things which are visual, you got to be on Pinterest and Instagram. If you're in the business space, you've got to be on LinkedIn. I may recommend that you're always on LinkedIn. You should absolutely have a Facebook fan page, if not a company page. And then you don't need to post too much. But what you need to do is you need to be able to communicate on an effective basis. What I typically say, and this is for most business people, is you can get away with 5 minutes a day. And how you get away with 5 minutes a day is break your day into your social media day into two pieces. First part of the day, spend a minute, just a minute, sharing content that you find compelling, that you find interesting. So it might mean you end up sending 4 or 5 tweets, or you send a tweet or two in a LinkedIn post or a Facebook post, or you snap a picture and you put it on Facebook or Instagram. So spend a minute sharing something compelling to you. And then later on in the day, spend 4 minutes interacting with the people who touch that content, right? It could just be, you know, they might have shared, tweeted, retweeted, whatever it was, or made a comment, you know, like their comments. It doesn't cost you a lot to you know, it takes a second less to like somebody's comment or respond back to a comment. And you don't have to do a lot of this. But if you spent 4 minutes a day doing that, that would be more than enough for you to actually demonstrate that you're out there doing stuff. And it's pretty powerful. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is. It's great to be able to see that. And I said in a microcosm, you see these fighters that do interact with their fans. I mean, they don't do a hell of a lot of tweeting, but they do interact with their fans. And you're getting that instant feedback, and you're also getting some goodwill in terms of what they, you know, what you're getting in return in terms of your product, and you know, happy social media followers equals happy business. So hopefully that's absolutely great. So you know, we only have a few minutes left. My next guest is just in queue right now. I want to mention you can follow Mitchell on Twitter at happyabout. That's at happyabout, and facebook.com/happyabout. The AHAguy.com. You guys can check them out there as well. Anything else you need to promote at all, Mitchell?
Oh, sure. What I'd say is I have a website called ahathat.com. We've had hundreds of authors write their books in 8 hours or less. So you go to ahathat.com. And if you're really interested and you like the aha moments, we can ghostwrite an aha book for you. We have a special offer for $997. And if you really like what you're hearing, we just put something in 2 weeks ago, and it's getting significant value. And that is you can get me on the phone for a half hour. And I will guarantee that I'll deliver at least 3 aha messages of what your audience wants to hear. So what I might recommend doing, and we were charging and charged $297 for that, but I'll give you a special code just for this program that you can use to bring the price down to $97. So if you go to ahathat.com, ahathat.com/iwant3, the letter I, want, and the number 3, and when you get to the coupon code, type in S, capital K, 01. It'll bring the price point from $297 to $97. And it's a very cool way because I'm happy to listen to your story and figure out what aha messages your audience wants to hear from you. And it's a good start to start thinking about the world and what you do in business in a slightly different way. So thanks for listening. And certainly if you want, go to ahathat.com. We've got 38,000 quotes that you can share today for free in seconds, and 700,000 users you will be joining. That's ahathat.com.
Okay, Mitch, yeah, gotcha. Mitchell, absolute pleasure to be able to talk to you a little bit about business and customer service as well. Best of luck to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Look forward to it. Have a great day. Bye now.
That was Mitchell Levy, everybody. You guys check him out, the AHA guy, ahaguy.com. You guys can check his stuff out as well. My next guest is in queue. This guy is an award winner now, Christian artist. He's also he's an activist for special needs as well. It's great to be able to talk to him as well. I am absolutely privileged to have Rain Anthony on with us right now. Are you there, Rain?
Yes. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. First of all, congratulations on the award.
Thank you. I am so glad. I'm glad because it's for these kids. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's great to be able to see such a positive voice in terms of the music that you put out as well. I mean, it's great to be able to in there. So it's great. What's been going on with you in terms of your music? Tell me a little bit about what's been going on with you recently.
Yes, with the music, when we did the video for it, and with the IMC award, I didn't go because I had a meeting for the Special Needs Rock Awards that I'm coming up. But I happened to be at the meeting and look on my phone, and I was like, "Oh my goodness, I won!" So I was very excited about that, and we're working on the movie. They Can't Talk, But We Can, as well as the play, and it's all going to tie in to the song "I'll Trust You."
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a great message and all that as well. Can you tell me a little bit about the background about the song and, you know,
yes,
a little background about the movie and all that as well?
Yes. Well, the song, it was actually written by Fred Jerkins, who's Michael Jackson's producer, and a lot of other people. And what I did, I sent him an email because I couldn't write this one because my son was allegedly abused. He was special needs. And he died from it. His teachers in the school had abused him, and we didn't know anything about it. He was abused twice, and they covered it up. The second time he was abused, I found out about it, and that's when I found out about the first abuse. And this second abuse, the teacher put a makeshift neck brace she made out of a back brace with a belt, and he couldn't breathe. And in the first abuse, they threw him out of the wheelchair, and I mean they pushed the other. It was six kids, and they just really tormented them. And I didn't know about that. So the song is written in honor of my son and for the awareness of the special needs. So when I go out and sing the song, I focus on the awareness. So it's, you know, and my son, he was special needs. He couldn't walk or talk. So he's gone now, and I had to, you know, I have to really get this out so that parents can be aware that whether you're special needs or not, you need to go and visit the schools and get to know the principal and the teachers and all of them.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we don't hear too often about, but yes, it is a serious issue as well. I mean, like it says, I mean, these kids cannot talk to you, you know, and tell you something
yes
is going on. So, you know, it's great to be able to have people like you kind of reach out and tell people about, you know, about how this
yes
and all that as well. And the ability of some, you know, sometimes it's tough being a teacher or a caregiver for a special needs child as well. That doesn't excuse what they do, but it's one of those things that this is one of those crises in America that people should be aware about.
Yes, and you know, ever since it's been in the state of Georgia, it's been more abuse. I mean, it's like with the special need kids, it's happening, and I'm in the process now. We did manage to get cameras in the classroom. So now I'm in the process of working with the senators. I never thought I'd be doing this, first of all, but working with the senators to get the immunity law amended, because any abuse with a government official does an abuse, they're immune to it. So I am in the process of amending that so that if it's proven that you've abused anyone, then you will pay the consequences for it.
Yeah, you know, I'm really interested in seeing, you know, some, you know, overall legislation about that, and to be able to see, you know, these kids being taken care of properly. You know, it's not, you know, it's like I said, it's a shame that, this still goes on in terms of it. So it's great to be able to have this organization and be able to tell your story in terms of that as well. But let's talk a little bit something a little bit happier. Let's talk a little bit about your background, Joe. You're originally from Florida. You're currently up in Atlanta. Are you there?
Yeah, say it again. I couldn't hear you.
Okay. You're originally from Florida, but you're currently up in Atlanta, correct?
Yes, yes. I live in Atlanta now. I'm originally from Florida, Jupiter, Florida, home of Burt Reynolds. I'm from Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah, I believe that is East Coast, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in Florida, I mean, it's part of the South. Really great gospel heritage in terms of the South. I mean, you started out with the choirs down there, I'm assuming. Tell me a little bit about how you got started in music.
Yeah, I started singing with my family, a family group called the Family Voices of West Jupiter, and I kind of moved from that and started working with Holger Katus, which is, he produced for Stevie B. He was out and I did dance music. I also can sing country. I just went within and just started using all of the different gifts that you have inside of you. And and from that point, I moved to Atlanta, and I was singing with Dottie Peoples, gospel artist, for probably 4 years. And I started hosting different shows, and I went to the Oscars year 15 and 16, 2015, 2016, was at the Oscars hosting the red carpet. And it's just, it's just amazing what you can do if you just tune in within yourself.
Was there anybody in particular at the Oscars that you remember interviewing that you were absolutely you were one of those moments where you can't believe it that you're interviewing somebody?
Right. I couldn't hear, your phone is going out. Say it again.
Okay. I was saying that was there any cool moments while you were at the red carpet at the Oscars?
Yes, the cool moment was meeting the A-list artists. Just to meet them and know, and pretty much my whole background at the Oscars was really the platform to bring awareness. So it was great to know that they understood what I was doing and they supported. And you learn about different families that have special needs in their family. And it's a great thing, and to know, because a lot of people, they keep it hidden, but they didn't. They were talking and supporting me and willing to do whatever it takes, and it's been working. So the Oscars was a great, it's just, I couldn't believe that I was asked to actually to be on the red carpet to even talk to the people. But yes.
Yeah, it's such a great opportunity to be able to talk to, some of these people.
Yes.
Who are very social influencers and also, very kind people that they want to help as much as they possibly can.
Yes.
You're currently out of Atlanta. I just had Raven Farrell on a little bit earlier. She's in the upcoming movie, All Eyes on Me, the Tupac Shakur biopic. And she's out of Atlanta as well. I mean, I was asking her a little bit about the scene in terms of Atlanta and the filmmaking and television as well. It seems like it's the hotbed now. What's your kind of opinion on that?
Yes, it's really good because I live and didn't know I live right next door to where they do all the filming. It's in a place where you wouldn't think, you're just driving by. But being that I'm in the industry, I know that it goes on there. But it's really great to be in Atlanta about this time now, especially that, with all of the filming and all of that. I mean, it's like Hollywood.
Yes, and, like I said, with that comes opportunities as well. I mean, there's so many productions that are out of Atlanta now too. You know, Lee Daniels has a lot of his stuff down there as well.
Oh really?
A few people, yeah. It's great to be able to see that, and there's those many opportunities down there as well. Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to have those opportunities as well. Have you been hosting any television as of late besides the music, or has this been your main focus?
Yeah, as far as television?
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Uh-oh, your phone is breaking up again.
Okay, sorry. With television, I mean, yeah, what's going on with that? Is anything cool going on with that?
Yes, I had a television show, but then I pretty much I kind of got away from it, but now we're getting back into doing different it's with a inspirational channel. So I'm going to be doing a television show again, and it's going to bring a lot of people in. Kind of like I want to get more into, I guess since all this happened, I'm just into making things right now. You know, with a lot, I don't know why this happened, but because I've been through this, it seems like to me that when I go on TV, I want to be able to pretty much change things and make it better for people. So I'm going to bring in like political people just to find out what can you do or what's going on, when you're going to do it. And, you know, kind of like that, that's been my drive. And even getting a series, something that's going to show different things that's like, you know, like, because I know a lot of different people that I'm working with for the movie, which is Christal Wilson and Deatra Hicks, and just a lot of different producers that's helping me. So being that I'm on that side now, I'm going to try to bring something totally different that people wouldn't expect.
So it'll be interesting. How was it for you to casting? Were you a part of the casting, or to be able to get some of the crew and some of the directors and all that, or was that something a little bit separate?
Yes, definitely. That's what we're talking about now. I'm learning. We're getting ready to have. We have the script and all of that done now for the movie, and we're getting ready to start that. I guess that's the next thing after we do get the script and all that together. But yes, definitely.
Now you also work with WMMQGradio.com as well. I mean, that's still bumping a little bit.
Yes, I'm the founder of that station, and I started it as a little small station, not expecting it to do all this, but it was a voice for me. So everything was going back towards the special needs and all of that. So that's been a voice. So what I did, I took the station, and we play all music, old school, new school, rock, country, every genre you can think of, because what I'm doing is getting everybody to listen, and then we uplift any type of cause. Like if you have a cause, we'll play the commercial. We have different people come on and speak about things, but we are the source, so we change it. We give you the solution instead of just talking about it. And it's doing really great. And because of the station, I was asked by W Rock Radio. I have a show on there. Well, I'm with their network now, and I play 80s music, and they give me the platform to talk about things like, and they have millions of listeners. So it's just been a really movement for me, and I am so thankful.
Yeah, you know, like old school 80s is a personal favorite of mine. Just to be able to hear some of the lyrics back in the day, it was a lot of positive stuff. It was a lot of stuff in terms of just having fun and all that as well. So, I absolutely love the idea, the concept of that as well. I mean, who were some of your favorite artists back then?
Say it again. I couldn't hear you.
Who are some of your favorite artists back in the day?
Oh, back in the day?
Yeah.
I like, it was, what's his name? I like, so I play a lot of them. George Michaels and Aretha Franklin. And definitely Whitney Houston.
Yeah, yes. Sorry to say,
and my first
song, go ahead.
My first song was Kenny Rogers' Lady. That's the first song that I ever sang when I was in, like, growing up.
Yeah, I don't know if many people know this, but actually Lionel Richie wrote that song.
Yes, 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 Lady. That was my first song.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, that was, yeah, there was some jams back in the day, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see that as well. You know how much of that kind of almost, and some of that must have influenced you a little bit in terms of your music as well. So it's, you know, it's great to be able to see, you know, you kind of go across genres. I hear a lot of artists say that nowadays that it's not just one singular type of music that they go through. They'll listen to a little bit of everything. So it's great to be able to see some of those influences as well. Anything else? Yeah, we've got a million things probably going on right now, but anything that we've missed, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I would like to just let everyone know that on October 22nd, we're having our third annual Special Needs Rock, and we did pick up a sponsor to cover it every year because they like what's going on. And also for Michael, I appreciate Michael, MTS Management, for all that he does, because when I told him I wanted to speak, oh my goodness. So, you know, and for him connecting me with people like yourself to actually help me heal, because when I talk about this, I am healing every minute, and I thank God that you're a part of it, because it's helping me.
Well, thank you for telling your story and getting out to the audience. I think that's important to be able, like I said, there's a lot of times when you don't think about this, and you know how important it is to be a voice for special needs children, and making sure that they are treated correctly. So it's great to be able to have a voice like yours on here and to be able to put out the word on that as well. You know, like I said, you're just in the beginning portion of this movie. It'll be interesting to see how everything goes. You have to give me an update when that starts to get rolling in terms of that as well. Maybe we'll get you on right before October when the event happens as well. I want to mention to everybody, you guys can follow Rain on Twitter at Rain Anthony. That's RAHNANTHONI. Also on Facebook.com/RainAnthony. RainAnthony.com, you guys can check that out as well. And the nonprofit organization is called They Can't Talk But We Can, Inc.org. You guys can check out that website. That's They Can't Talk But We Can, Inc.org. So make sure you guys check that
out. And
out
I am available.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was saying I am available for if I could come out and sing and speak and for nothing. I just want to do it. I'm just so hyped about awareness. So if anybody is interested, just hit me up. I am available. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, so make sure I gave you all the information. If you ever want to talk to Rain through those places, please do so. You know, especially to talk about this issue as well. I best of luck with the legislation as well. I really hope things kind of impress that as well. So I think that's everything, Rain, at all. I'm, like I said, so again, thanks a lot for being on the show, Rain, and best of luck with everything in terms of the.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, Rain, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
God bless you, Mother. Anthony, everybody, that's RAHNANTHONI. You can follow him on Twitter and on Facebook at Rain Anthony. Guys, can check that out as well. Sorry to say, a lot of long-winded guys this week are off. I would have talked a little bit more at the Periscopers, but we've only gotten like one in or whatever, a couple of rude ones that I had to block real quick, but But I'm going to start doing this over. I know it's going to be a slow grind in terms of this as well. But I already know that there's plenty of people wanting to come on the show coming starting next week. So we'll have some updates coming up on Twitter at SWIV, at SWIV. You can check out our updates on Periscope as well now at SWIV1. That's at SWIV1 in terms of on the Periscope. But SWIV on Twitter will get you there just as well. Also on Facebook, Somewhere in Vegas, we'll have all the information in terms of our upcoming shows as well. So we'll probably do another three for to next week. So maybe check that out as well. If there's not anything else, we'll see you guys next week. It'll probably be a regular time again, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Talk a little bit about what's been going on there. I'll have a list of guests for next week coming up in the next few days, so make sure you guys check that out as well. Please check us out at our social medias, and we'll have those updated as we can. With that in mind, we'll talk to you guys. We'll talk to you guys next week here on Somewhere in Vegas, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Monday.